Well, we can do it either way, but the storm in Noah's time lasted 40 days and 40 nights. The water went up for 150 days. Then the waters began to recede. It is possible that before the flood that they had never seen rain before. Not certain, but in Genesis 2, mist came up from the garden, and if mist did not change, it's possible they'd never seen rain before, so that when Noah talked to the people, and he was the preacher of righteousness, and he warned them that they didn't pay any attention at all. I mean, not only no flood, but no rain. God had not forgotten Noah. So he remembers him while the ark is floating around. Genesis 6, we've already done how evil people were and God decided. Genesis 7, the flood. Now today, Genesis 8, the ark rests on the mountain range and then they exit it. Genesis 8, 1 through 5. But God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the cattle that were with him in the ark, and God caused a wind to pass over the earth, and the water subsided. Also the fountains of the deep and the floodgates of the sky were closed, and the rain from the sky was restrained. And the water receded steadily from the earth, and at the end of 150 days the water decreased. In the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the ark rested upon the mountains of Ararat. The water decreased steadily until the 10th month. In the 10th month of the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains became visible. We reviewed a little bit the size of the ark last time. Those people that study this make it a specialty. 125,000 sheep would fit on the ark. And that is, well, sheep are a little bigger than most animals, believe it or not. That kind of surprises me because I think of the farm animals, and I think of bigger than sheep, but the typical animal, sheep is a little bit right in the middle or a little bit bigger. Three tiers, three inside decks that would hold animals. Relative to storage of food, that's always a question. Perhaps God caused them to migrate to get on board, and then maybe he caused some of them to hibernate. They don't normally hibernate, but that would affect the need for room for food storage. So the people who work on this as a specialty think it would work out okay. Two of every kind, now that's a biblical word, kind, might be a little bit higher than species, but two of every kind. And the flood went up for 150 days. Now, we all know about the work of the ark in Kentucky, and I'm sure they've worked real hard on dimensions and so forth. Lots of information about that. There is another one in the Netherlands, and I didn't know whether to show this or not, but I think it'll work out to show it. Probably what surprised me the most is it's Christiaan Amanpour, who's usually on CNN. And I'm sure she's Iranian, but Christiane's a funny name for an Iranian. She's not like us. She's very liberal politically, but she did this, and we're going to try to do just a few minutes of it because it's actually too long to show the whole thing. So a few minutes of this, then I'll come back. Maybe I'll sit down here and watch it again. Well, it's too long to watch the whole thing, but it's obvious kids like the story. And B, I was a little bit surprised it was ABC News doing it. And her, because when I see her, she's very liberal on politics. But I've always wondered if you're born in Iran and your first name is Christiane, if there isn't some sort of connection. I hope she's a believer. I will go back to Genesis 8, and I won't read verses 1 through 5 again, but it begins with God remembered Noah. Remember is Zachar from Zechariah. He remembered him. Very specific timing in here. Sounds like, you know, whoever wrote the original text that Moses later included and copied, they knew how many days rained for 40, it went up for 150, then it rested after 150, and it rested 74 more days. The name Noah means rest. His dad may have never known. He thinks it means, you know, he named the kid for rest from working hard on the land, but it was rest or shelter from the flood. It landed in Ararat, which is in Turkey or Armenia. Perhaps not the single Mount Ararat, but in the Ararat regions. It's like a chain. You know, we talk about Rockies and Appalachians and Alps and so forth. Somewhere in the Ararat range, Turkey or Armenia. You wouldn't think so, but I write a Christmas card every year to an Armenian family in Houston. Just kind of odd. They're the ones that wanted me to go over to Houston and make a speech on mental illness, but they're from Armenia. And he's a history teacher in Houston. And they don't like the Turks. Turks and Armenians don't like each other. Some of us went to Turkey, and surprising to me, Ken Weiss said, all the Turks believe they're the center of the world. Well, that's where the ark was. So, and they know it. And so when they say you're the center of the world, they'll say, well, the human race started all over again from here. So that is kind of their attitude, and they all know about Mount Ararat. Many claim to have spotted things, and there are books with pictures. I have two. Violet Cummings, who's Seventh-day Adventist. They like Old Testament studies. Jonathan Morris is theologically like us, and he wrote that kind of book. More recently, Randall Price has been looking for it. Regarding to finding it, they have not found it. Otherwise, it would be well known, be on the news all the time if it were well known. Now, we will again keep giving evidence for the flood. There's a strong evidence for the flood. Whether there are remains up there or not, no one knows. Whether they would last that long, but there's evidence for the flood. I will say regarding apologetics, the best thing to do is to work on the life of Christ first. You know, if the evidence is that Jesus rose from the dead and did miracles, well, then I'd kind of believe what he believed about Noah, that kind of thing. But as we will continue, there's great evidence for a flood, regardless of whether they ever find the ark or not. Somewhere in the Ararat range, boat is stuck, and verse 5, the tops of the mountains became visible. Now, in the next section, he starts to send some birds out. Let's read about that, beginning in verse 6. Then it came about at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark, which he had made. He sent out a raven, and it flew here and there until the water was dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove from him to see if the water was abated from the face of the earth, but the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot, so she returned to him in the ark, for the water was on the surface of the earth. Then he put out his hand and took her and brought her into the ark to himself. So he waited yet another 7 days, and again he sent out the dove from the ark. And the dove came to him toward evening, and behold, in her beak was a freshly picked olive leaf. So Noah knew that the water was abated from the earth. Then he waited yet another 7 days and sent out the dove, but she did not return to him again. Started out with a raven. It never came back. The best thought, it seems like Noah would know it, is the raven might have been eating off the carcasses floating around out there, and the raven didn't care whether it would latch itself to a carcass and so forth. So Noah is like, might be a lot of dead critters out there, but I can't tell there's any land yet. So next he sent out a dove, and evidently that's looking for vegetation. It's not going to sit on a carcass. So no vegetation, and it came back. And Noah understood that. It's a girl dove, female, always a she, back in the ark for 7 more days. Sent it out again, this time an olive leaf. You'd make him think like, something's growing out there. Don't know where, don't see it, but something's growing out there. But came back. Then after another several days, he sent it out for a third time. This time it's gone. And Noah knew that there is some land out there somewhere, and eventually they'll get out. I waited until the bird part of the story to give some of the flood legends that are around the world, because some of them include the bird part of the story. We could look at several sources who have studied this. I did Jonathan Morris again. You want to do updates, you know, Wikipedia has updates, but I just stayed with Jonathan Morris. I'll give you the statistics, and then we'll read one of them that I read years ago. 17 flood legends from the Middle East and Africa. Babylon, Chaldea, Egypt, Persia, Syria. Maasai tribe, Hottentots. And there are more, I'm just giving examples of each one. 38 Pacific Islands, counting Australia, New Zealand, New Guinea, Fiji, Timor, Hawaii, Micronesia, New Britain, Sumatra, just to use a few. The Far East, 21, China and India, Mongolia, Bangladesh, so forth. Europeans, 13, Celts, Druids, Finns, Iceland, Lapland, Lithuania, Normans, Romania, Siberia, Wales, Transylvania, and I'm just picking them out. Greeks, Athens, Kos, Crete, Rhodes, Samothrace, Thessalonica. North America, 58 tribes. And this is actually an old list. Nothing new about it. Aleutian Islands, Arapaho, Eskimo, Blackfoot Tribes, Cherokee, Chippewa, Crees, Delaware, Hurons, Iroquois, Lake Tahoe, Mandans, Menominee, Ojibwe, and 3 miles from where I grew up, Potawatomi Indian Reservation, 3 miles from where I grew up. Central America, Aztecs, Maya, Nicaraguan Indians, Panamanian Indians, South America, 24 more. Central America was 22. You get the idea. Incas, Peruvians, Rio de Janeiro tribes, down at the bottom of the tip tribes. Okay, so how many are there? It's basically everywhere. Basically everywhere in anthropology, all of the human subgroups have some sort of flood story. Then in his research, he tries to put it together. How many have a special protected family from the flood? 88%. How many survive in a boat? 70%. How many that it is a flood that destroys the whole world? 95%. How many have animals in this boat? 67%. How many survivors end up on a mountaintop? 57%.
So it varies a little bit, but it kind of has a very similar story. It's all over the world coming down. So what made all the peoples of the world talk about a flood in their heritage and in their legends? We have made notes, and the first three pages of the notes, they should be on the ends. I don't know how many are on the tables, but they should be on the ends. This is one of my seminary textbooks from years ago, and I kept these two. It's called The Ancient Near East, Princeton University, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And what it is they translate over into English many of the architectural finds. Upnashbish team said to him, Gilgamesh, I will reveal to thee, Gilgamesh, a hidden matter, a secret of the gods. Let's just try to do the red. When their hearts led the gods to produce a flood. Tear down this house, build a ship. Give up your possessions, seek life. Or swear worldly goods, keep the soul alive. Get aboard the ship, take seed of every living, all living things. Next page, just staying with the red. Page 68 in the original. Whatever I had, I put on her. Whatever of silver, I put on her. Whatever of gold, whatever of all living beings, I put on her. All my family and kin, I made go aboard the ship, the beasts of the field, the wild creatures of the field. When he orders unease at night, will shower down a rain of light. Board the ship, batten up the entrance. Next, red part. With the first glow of dawn, a black cloud rose from the horizon. Next part, because these are false gods. These are just anthropological images. Consternation over Aded reaches to the heavens, who turned blackness all that had been light. The land was shuttered like a pot. Over on the right side, something about the seventh day, the sea grew quiet, the tempest was still, the flood ceased. I looked at the weather, stillness had set in. All of mankind's dead. Back to dust. On Mount Nisar, the ship came to a halt. On Mount Nisar, they held the ship fast. When the seventh day had rise, they set forth and freed a dove. Final page. The dove went forth but came back. Since no resting place was visible, she turned around. Then I set forth a raven. The raven went back and forth. He eats and pause and turns not around. Then I let out all to the four winds and offered a sacrifice on top of the mountain. Then I underline a few pages on, on why this happened, why the person says it happened in this, non-Jewish anthropological flood legend. How could thou on reasoning bring a deluge? On the sinner imposes sin. On the transgressor imposes transgression. And see it over again, bringing a deluge, bringing a deluge, bringing a deluge, bringing a deluge for sin. Now that is not the Bible. That is just the sample of ancient Mesopotamia. And it's a sample of their legends. These are like this all over the world. So now, last week we studied the next page. I'd just like to review, because it's important, that we studied this outline of, say, fossils and geology. But in anthropology, it's all over the world. All these tribes have flood legends, and very not identical to Genesis, but very much like it in many details. So can we just review this one now? I'm mainly reviewing it so we remember it. This gets left out in most organizations. This gets left out. Number one, sea creatures, fossils on top of the mountains. There's a list of some. And in coal mines. Think of the 6-foot-long fish. Fossils in Kansas on a ranch in a dry land on top of these other mountains. land dinosaurs out to sea in the ocean. How did the land dinosaurs get out between Norway and Finland and 1.5 miles in the dirt in the ocean? Water and land animals all jumble together. They don't live together. They usually don't die together. They're all swirling around and jumble together, buried rapidly. Cataclysm. Become fossils. Coal beds are buried vegetation. How about 3,000 feet out in the middle of the South China Sea? Some forest turned upside down. Remember the Mount St. Helens picture? Layer after layer after layer after layer after layer in 1980, 3 hours. Polystrate fossils are trees. Layer, 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 one tree. Which is better explanation? Layers can pass. Or a tree live for hundreds of millions of years and sit upright. Most important soft tissue dinosaurs and, I would look on ICR. I did, again, read this book. You know, this is, like, complicated. The soft tissue dinosaurs. Brian Thomas, a very good author. I'd look for Brian Thomas on that on the Internet. If we didn't have COVID, I'd pass this around, okay? So I thought about it, but I don't know. Might breathe, I don't know. But there are pictures in here where they do bone scans. Of dinosaurs, and the red dots come out and the green dots come out, and that means soft tissue in them. And there are, I think, 77 in his list. I did not have time to read this, but this is the one on geology that I ordered. And I kind of felt good because it has a dent in it. Because we send out books here all the time, and I feel bad when they have dent, but they did everything they could. It was shrink wrapped. It was flapped over. So anyway, but got Michigan in it. Big sand dunes. That's Tim Clary. If you want to work hard on it. I haven't had time to read that one yet. It just came in. So there's a review of the evidence. This is geology and paleontology. But then today. Anthropology, flood legends all over the world. What would all that do? Well, what it does is it shortens the time span. Fossils are dead. Massive, worldwide, dead. Okay? And the argument for soft tissues in them is it wasn't that long ago. You're going back to a worldwide destruction that people like to deny in the past. Because it's going to happen again with fire next time. That sort of thing. I saved the anthropology part till we got to the ravens and the dove, because that's in their story too. Now on the final page, I copied this off because the starting of the good research on creation science was the Genesis flood by Whitcomb and Morris. 1961, that was a while back. I would run into Dr. Whitcomb at various get-togethers. I'd run into him, and always happy. I think it's pretty good for a person nearly 90 years old. Always happy. At any rate, I'd read his book when I was in high school, but he sent me new books and so forth. We talk on the phone here, but he sent part of his diary, which I've made reference to, but I wanted to make sure that we saw where it came from. This is his diary from May 19th, 1947, because like I say, he's a generation above me. He's older. And he said this on the phone. Let me read it. Professor Albert Einstein came to our Princeton Evangelical Fellowship meeting at Frick Chemistry Auditorium, Princeton University, see the Moody film, The God of Creation. I gave him a gospel tract afterwards. This is his letter to me on the top. And then in his diary, 200 came, including Albert Einstein. Now, that relates to this thought, is people should be open. A lot of them aren't. People should be open to research. In other words, a person that, like Albert Einstein, who is a scientist, they should look at all the sides. And I don't know if anybody will ever know what he really believed, but he got a gospel tract, and he at least went to the Christian meeting and watched the information. Now we are done with the birds. Let's look at Genesis 8:13, and we'll keep going. Now in the 601st year, in the first month, on the first day of the month, sounds like New Year's, the water was dried up from the earth. Then Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the surface of the ground was dried up. In the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dried, and God spoke to Noah, saying, go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and animals and creeping things that creep on the earth, and may breed abundantly and be fruitful and multiply. Then Noah went out, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, every creeping thing, every bird, everything that moves went out of the ark. And then next, you know, like a worship service. Like, thanks for survival. And then it closes, verse 22. While earth remains, seed time and harvest, spring and fall, and cold and heat, you know, winter and summer, summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. There probably was a window, and the birds go out, and there probably was a gallery all the way around the top. You know, like a passenger ship today has got windows all the way around it. So probably the birds went out one window, but this one here, he's probably opening the covering. Not just one window, he's opening the covering all the way around it. Rain has stopped. And I would imagine they'd want some wind and fresh air and that sort of thing, and some light, for heaven's sakes. And then they're able to get out of the ark, Eastern Turkey or Armenia. Verse 18, they went out. Then they have this, I would say, be what we'd call a Thanksgiving service. I don't know whether it was a funeral service or not, but that's how I would think. I would do both. I don't know what Noah did. I would do a Thanksgiving service, but I also would think of this is very, very solemn and holy. And they were only their thoughts were only evil continually, and they're all gone. So I probably would sort of do a, think about a memorial. I think how sad it is, and yet Thanksgiving at the same time. The Lord approved. In the Old Testament, salvation has always been by faith. If they brought a sacrifice as a substitute for faith, it's like Cain. Here's this great thing I'm doing. I'll be okay. That didn't work. So if they brought a sacrifice with faith, they got approved. Kind of like its animal blood will only work for so long. It will cover. It will only work for so long, but I'll trust God to take care of it fully. Noah's attitude is, I'm doing what God said with the animals, but I am trusting in God to take care of it fully. And that meant approval. So always saved by faith, back and forth. Now in Genesis 8, do remember that geology, paleontology, anthropology, flood legends all support there was a worldwide flood. I deliberately made the title about Jesus is our ark now. 1 Peter says that. Jesus is our ark now. And we have a time of grace, but now we're waiting who gets in the ark. Who comes up to Jesus and trusts in him to get us through the destruction. Right now it's open. We should trust in Jesus the Savior. Someday it'll be over with. And the world will never be destroyed by water again, but it will be destroyed by fire again. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father,